save time and put the microphone up.
So is that preserved on the point here? The microphone mutation?
Microphone mutation, please.
You permute both the row and the column at the same time, so it's a diagonal preserved, so you can do point permutations and preserve whatever.
Oh, yeah, interchange.
Yeah, so, usually we write
interchange
0, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, interchange the same column and the same row and preserve the diagonal. Yeah, that's what you want to do. So you can,
basically you're interchanging, X1 with X7 or something.
Right,
so it interchanges both. All right, so what we want to do is find the dual basis. We were finding the dual basis for MAB. We want some one-forms omega BD. And let's see, we want B to equal C and A to equal D to give us one. So for example, M12, we want to be dual to omega 21. So with that, we want to get one. So we want A to equal D and C to equal B. But remember, we've got this double notation. So MAB is minus eta AC eta BD. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
DC.
Right, it can't be symmetric. Another way to see this is if I lower an index, MAB is eta AC MCB. That's equal to minus MBA. Right, we define these things to be, when they're doubly covariant, they're just flat out anti-symmetric. But I can also write this as minus eta BD MDA. And so comparing these two, you get this relationship.
So compare those two, and you invert one of these, and you get that relationship.
What was the question?
I'm reminding us of what we derived last time. This is the Poincaré-Lie algebra. And we derived it, at least with some constant here. I was pointing out, Joe, that this, the Lie algebra of the SOP2, the transformations that preserve P plus 1s and Q minus 1s on the diagonal, any order, it looks just the same. It's the same thing. You just replace eta by this thing, and it's the same Lie algebra. So you do nothing different if you want the rotation group in 47 dimensions, right? It still looks like this. The only place that it looks different is in three dimensions where you have a three-index Levy-Civita tensor. So here's an exercise for you. In 3D, let ji equal epsilon ijk mjk. It's Euclidean, so now the index position doesn't matter. Show that this is equivalent. Let's put a constant here. Where this means all that up there to ji jj equals epsilon ijk jk. Okay, you've seen this one for the rotation algebra SO3. All right, well, if you multiply this by two epsilons and collect one of the epsilons onto there and sort out your sign, you can turn this into that with some suitable constant here. So, good exercise. Convince yourself that that's right. That this actually is the old familiar SO3 rotation algebra, but you're lucky here that you happen to have that three index levees in it. It's simple to simplify writing it. In general, it looks like this. So that's the algebra of the rotation group in every dimension.
Multiply everything by epsilon. I just
Two copies. If you want an epsilon on each of the m's, so you can turn them into j's.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, you probably want a half in here because you're double counting and stuff.
You want to lower the index on three. Want to lower index first.
It's Euclidean, so it doesn't matter where you put the index.
Okay.
Yeah, put them anywhere that you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
Okay, question. So, what I was saying is that, all right, we want to take account of the fact that we have this anti-symmetry to M. So, in fact, if A equals C and B equals D, we ought to get a minus 1. And so that works if we set A, C, and A, B, D over here. So the duality is actually twice this delta thing we defined. Dual to T. So let's see, we've got that set of one forms. Then we also define PA with omega B to be just one for each of them. So we define four translational one forms. We define, actually, there are six of these omegas, six of these m times two because we're double counting. Okay, now we want to write the Maurer-Cartan equation. And they, in general, look like this. D of any given omega is minus a half times the structure constant with a wedge pair of bases of our connection one form. So that's what they look like. In this case, A is either a pair or just a single thing. You know, this is for M or
makes it interesting.
You know, so omega A is either an omega A B or a one index omega.
Will you ever have like three index and leave them there too?
No, one or two usually will do it. I've never run into a group where I needed three,
but you could.
They're just labels. They're convenient labels. You choose them just to stay on the group in any convenient way. It happened to be convenient to label anti-symmetric matrices with an anti-symmetric pair of labels. Right? So the label here tells me which element of the anti-symmetric basis is non-zero. Okay. So, let's do the easy one first. So, let's let omega A be the momentum generator. So, we have minus a half, C, BC, and then just a little a here. Omega B wedge omega C. Now, what are the relevant structure constants? Right? That's a lowercase a single index here means the P on the right side of the commutation relation. So we have to look at our Lie algebra and ask, when do I have a P on the right? Well, here. Just the one case. So this is the only structure constant. It's the commutator of an M with a P. So this is going to be, there are two possibilities. Either I have the commutator of an M with a P to give a P, and then in that case I have omega CD wedge omega B here, or I have the other way around, I have a P type with an M CD to give a P, and in that case I have an omega B wedge omega CD here. So those are the only two possibilities. And they're the same. If I interchange these two, I get a sign because it's a wedge product. If I interchange these two, I get a sign because the structure constants are anti-symmetric on the first pair of indices. So this is equal to that. I just get two of the same thing. So I get minus 1 times the structure constant. Well, the structure constant is, let's see, A, B are these two. I get a delta. Let's see, what's the kind of D? I need a DC, and then an A up will match that, and then a B down will sum with this one, omega CD wedge omega B. And the half goes away because I have two of the same thing. Let's see what this is. This is half of delta DB delta AC minus eta DA eta BC omega CD wedge omega B. So that's minus a half, and now here I get C goes to A, D goes to B, and then I get omega B for the first
zero, right?
What's that?
Wait, never mind.
Then here, all right, eta DA, eta BC, omega CD, that's going to simplify wedge omega B. This is just this anti-symmetry relation here. Alright, the omegas are anti-symmetric. Let me just work through what this is. This is equal to eta dA. Then this lowers to C, so I can write that as omega sub BV. Omega is anti-symmetric, so I can write this as eta dA times omega dB. And now I can use the metric to raise the D, so I get minus omega A up B down. So just using the metric and using the fact that the omegas, like the M's, are anti-symmetric when both indices are in the same position, either down or up. So, yeah, minus a half omega AB wedge omega B. Then two minuses gives me a plus, and I have an omega AB wedge omega B. And both of these things give me the same thing, so it cancels the half. And if I interchange the one form, I get plus omega B wedge omega AB. So that is the omega A, and that's the first Maurer-Cartan equation. That, of course, is the easy one. We haven't dealt with these M's yet. So I'm racing through here. Pummel me with questions. I don't feel pummeled yet. How about it? Did I lose you halfway through, or are you listening here? You would have wanted to do something. How about it, Nathan? Got a question for me?
I'm just a little confused on your second step.
Which one? Here?
Yeah. How did you get that part?
Okay. So I'm looking at just D of the momentum part of the connection. the P part. Right? A single index thing, that's the one that's dual to P.
Right.
Okay, so that means I need the structure constant, the commutator of the B and C type generators that give a momentum thing here. All right, so I go back to my Lie algebra and I look for anything with a P on the right, because these are the structure constants, right? This a P on the right, that's some kind of structure constant. Well, it's an AB type here with a C type there, and it gives me a momentum here.
Okay.
Right? So I pick everything that's got a P on the right. Those are the ones that are going to come in here. Well, there's just the one. It's a capital delta. So it can come two ways. An M with a P or a P with an M will give a P.
Oh, okay.
So you get it both directions.
Right.
Okay. If they're different, you get it both directions. If they're the same, like an M with an M giving an M, we'll come up with it in a minute. Well, you don't have to count twice there because they're both M's. So you've got them already.
Okay. Why do you have B indices in parentheses, though?
Well, because I'm using a complex label. You know, if the idea that this A index, a capital A, is either the anti-symmetric pair or a single one. So,
right, but now it's
so if I put it in parentheses, you know, this is a capital B, this is a capital C. But capital B can be either a double or a single. Capital C can be either a single or a double. So I'm summing over all possible values. Well, there are just two configurations that can be.
You see it?
How about it?
No, Jay? Do you get it?
All right, let's do the horrendous one.
Grant description, horrendous.
Okay, any questions about anything on the board? Let's see, I guess I want to use this form here, I think. So let me see, or, well, this is probably the form I need here. So we're good in the middle. Okay, so to find D of omega AB minus a half C capital B, capital C, and then I get a pair up here, AB. Well, let's see. Wait a minute, which way do these go? That needs to be AB. This two index notation is weird. Let's see. BC turned into a DC. So this is just going to be AB, I think. So AB there. Then here, omega capital B, which makes it capital C. So we're summing over all possibilities. So we could be looking at if these are two index types, that's an M with an M. Then we could have an M with a P, so you'd have 2 and 1, or 1 and 2. Or you could have a single index with each. That would be the commutator of 2P. Well,
commutator of 2P is 0.
Is 0, yeah. What we want to look at is, in what cases do we get M's on the right? Well, only if we're commuting an M with an M. Right? So, the only time that the structure constant has a two-index thing in the up position is when you've got an M on the right. Right? This structure constant here, this is lambda, this is a structure constant that's got a GB commuted with an HD to give an EF type thing. Actually, I've written them the same level, MEF, like that. So the only kind of structure constant that's got a two-index thing up is that ugly one. So we got to write the ugly one.
So this is going to be... instead of trying to change the indices here, I want to shuffle the positions here. I'm going to leave an arbitrary constant. I want to raise that E so that I have an MEF here. And that means I have to lower the E in this expression. So HB delta GE, I'm just lowering the E everywhere. FD. Eta GH, eta EB, delta FD. Eta DD, delta GE down now. Eta FH plus delta GD. BE, eta, HF. So this thing in parentheses is what I need if I've got a BD and GB and HD. Well, let me not use B here. In fact, let's let this be, EF. That's going to have an FE. So I'm going to choose these indices to match the way I've written the structure constant. So we've got an FE there. So now I can leave these indices if I choose this one to be a GB thing, and the second, the capital C, to be an HD, and the up thing to be an FE. Then this will be omega, they go opposite, so BG wedge omega DH. So now I just have to substitute exactly this thing in parentheses for that C. I've kept the constant here so I can make it tidy in the end. This one worked out just right. There's, you know, there could have been some funny factor here, but hey, there wasn't. That's nice. Okay, so what do we get? Delta HB, delta GE, delta FD. And eta GH, eta GB, delta FD. Minus eta BD, delta GE, eta FH, plus delta GD. GD BE. And eta HF, omega BG, wedge omega DH. Okay. And now we just use the Kronecker deltas and etas any way we see fit. So we're going to get omega B, G becomes E, then DH is going to become F, and the H is going to become B, first one. Then
Notice we've got G and B here. And you've got two eta's on an omega, B and G here. You can just swap off the indices with a minus sign. So I can make this a plus omega. So BG is going to become HE with the opposite sign. And then the delta FD is going to give me omega FH. Wedge product. Okay, just using the anti-symmetry, a pair of eta's on one of these anti-symmetric things just changes the sign, renames the indices. Then this one, FHBD, okay, the H and the D, let me swap on that one, so I'm going to get plus omega BE for the first one, just using the Kronecker here. And then the two eta's change the sign, so I've changed the sign, and I get an omega, DH is going to end up being FB. Then, the last one, again we have two eta's. Let's see, can I use them? One's B, now they're all in the wrong position. GD, HF, no. Let me look at what I can do that'll simplify this. Notice I've got an eta BE omega BG. I can write that as an omega down EG, which is minus omega GE. And then that'll just replace the G with a D. Now, tell you what, let me just raise and lower indices. That'll be simpler. So let's just this will replace the G with a D. This will lower the B to an E. So we'll have omega sub E D. Then here we have omega D up, and then this raises the H to an F. We'll just do it that way for starters. And then we'll fix it up eventually. I see what we can do. Okay. Now, question?
I just got the D's.
Okay, so these D's are summed. H is summed here, B is summed there, and I'm gonna interchange those so they look the same. Let's see.
D's are
summed
on that.
Yeah, the D's are summed. That sign looks funny. Let's see. If I interchange those, I get a minus sign. If I raise. Let's see. What do I want? Yeah, I still want to fuss with this term a little bit. I can write that as omega DE wedge omega FD. Interchange that pair gives a minus sign. Interchange that pair gives a minus sign. I can raise this D and lower that D at the same time. So I can write this as omega DE wedge omega FD. Now it looks like the other four.
Okay.
So now they all look the same. So I get minus 2 lambda times just one thing, omega FD. And there we go. Clearly I want to choose lambda minus 1/2. So then we get D of omega, FE is equal to omega BE wedge omega FB. Those are the Maurer-Cartan structure equations for the Poincaré group. They're not so bad. Okay, we went through a lot of structure constant stuff. It's a little messy to deal with that rotation group, but by the time we're done, we end up with some fairly simple structure equations. Yeah, I'm try to solve them. That's general relativity you're looking at. The form is really quite simple. And actually, solving these is not hard. I can write down a solution for those because they're still the group, right? It's pure gauge. Now we're going to take a quotient and we're going to generalize adding horizontal curvatures. Then we're doing Riemannian geometry. And it'll be what we spent all last semester doing. But boom, we've just done it from the Poincaré group in a couple of days. Well, there was a few months of prep in there. Okay, any questions? Let's move on to the next steps then. Maurer-Cartan are called structure equations.
Okay.
I guess I have.
So we did
these
that,
these are the structure equations.
These are those. Okay.
I may not have been calling them structure equations all along, but
they typically
are called the Maurer-Cartan structure equations. Anytime I've used Maurer-Cartan, it's correct to say structure equations. So we have d omega ab is omega cb wedge omega A, C, and D omega A is omega B wedge omega A B, like that. Okay, so we're going to do two things. We're going to take a group quotient. Let's call it curly P over curly L. That's the quotient of Poincaré by Lorentz. And we're going to generalize the connection. And that's going to give us horizontal curvatures. Curvature two form. Okay, that's our general procedure. So let's think about what horizontal means. Can any of you tell me what horizontal means here?
Curvature that goes across the gauges that you only get one term from each equivalent gauge.
That's a cross section you're thinking of. Yeah, you've got the right picture in mind. The idea of horizontal is okay for a general. So recall a general one form on the Poincaré group is going to take the form, let's call this, say, eta. It's going to be a linear combination of the one index and the two index omegas. Let me use something besides eta here. Let's just call it A. So, you know, a one form. Like this. So, that's a general one form. What's backwards?
Oh, I was just saying, eventually we're going to start like writing the letters in Kanji written backwards, and another letter backwards, the level backwards, that being something.
Yeah, get enough indecision. Yeah. Good idea. So these are our basis forms on the group manifold, and any other one form can be expanded in terms of them. But now we're taking a quotient by the Lorentz group, so we don't want our one forms to depend on the Lorentz direction, right? When we integrate a one form, we want it only to depend on where we are on the quotient manifold, not where we are on the Lorentz fibers. So we're going to drop all dependence on the two-index domain when we write our one form. So that means that, all right, we have our basis one forms. We're going to regard the two-index omegas as being some linear combination of the one-index omegas. Let's put some coefficient like that. curvatures, we're going to have some one-index and two-index curvatures, all right? We introduce curvatures for each generator. But these curvatures are going to be something that we expand only in terms of the one-index omega. Right. We don't add terms in these. A general two-form would have three different kinds of terms. It'd have, you know, the one-index ones, then a one and a two, and then a pair of twos. Right. A general two-form on the manifold would, you know, be, right, how many are there? There are 10 of these things, so, you know, there would be lots. But 10 times 9 of 4, there would be 45 basis two forms on the Poincaré group. But we're really only interested in so this is what we mean by horizontal. The other curvature, let's call it T, we can write as a linear combination of just the one index omega. Okay, that's what we mean by horizontal. Joe, question?
Well, I don't see how you can do that. We're going to be missing. I mean, isn't that an important?
We've taken a group quotient here. Okay, so this quotient, we've got the whole Poincaré group here. And what we're doing is we're looking at a manifold, which is the quotient of the Poincaré by the Lorentz. Now, this is six-dimensional. This is ten-dimensional. So this manifold is going to be some four-dimensional manifold. And at each point, we have a copy of the Lorentz group. Right, that's the picture we have in mind. So now, when we integrate along a curve in the Poincaré group, we want the value of the integral to depend only on how far we've moved in M, not how far we've moved up or down. We don't care what our local Lorentz transformation, how it has changed the basis for tangent vectors. We only care how we've moved in the quotient manifold. So we want to drop all dependence. So all of the forms we're going to deal with, we're going to drop all dependence on vertical motion here, motion in the Lorentz group. We can still change the gauge, but we don't want the curvature to be curvature of a 10-dimensional space. We want curvature of a 4-dimensional manifold.
Your
comments
are going to come out of the other.
Other questions?
Where do we have R, T, and R going on next? The omega AB, right?
Right. I'm going to generalize these equations. These are two-form equations.
Right.
So generalizing the connection, these equations will no longer hold. There will be some two form that we don't know. Well, I'm going to call them R and T. Right. There are two forms, but I require them to be horizontal.
Right. Are we adding the R to the first one and the T to the second one?
Yeah,
oh,
that's
okay.
Right. Okay. Yeah, there's going to be one curvature for each generator. So the labels on these curvatures match the labels on the generators. So now we get the Maurer-Cartan equation. I'm sorry. Now we get the Cartan structure equation.
Is that going to end up with the T being like torsion?
Yeah, that's right.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah, that's by
the T.
Yeah, so the Cartan.
Sorry, I was looking.
So the Cartan structure equation, we have G of omega AB is omega CB wedge omega AC plus RAB, and D omega A is omega B wedge omega AB plus TA. These are some unknown two forms, so now this connection is no longer a connection on the Poincaré group. It describes some curved manifold. So the presence of the R and the T mean that if we try to integrate around closed loops in this manifold, things are going to come back rotated, whereas if we'd done it just in the group, they would not. These describe describe a Cartan geometry. If we take the torsion equal to zero, it's a Riemannian geometry. We won't take the torsion equal to zero. We'll deal with that in another way. Let me see. We have conditions, integrability conditions. And integrability of these equations gives us the Bianchi identity. So let's figure out the Bianchi identities. If any time I take d squared, I've got to get zero. And if I take d of the right hand side, that's d of omega cb wedge omega ac minus omega cb wedge d of omega ac plus exterior derivative of rab. And now, everywhere I've got a d omega, I can substitute the structure equation again. So this first term becomes omega, better call it CD, so I better have a B wedge omega CD plus R CB wedge omega AC. Then this term we have omega CB wedge, and then we need an AC, the free indices here, so I better have omega some on a D, C wedge omega AD plus RAC plus DRAB. And now, notice the first term, I've got three omegas wedged together. D is some here, C is some there. Here, C is some here, D is some there. They're the same. Those cancel exactly. So those terms match. And what I end up with is D of RAB. Then we have plus RCB omega AC. Notice that that's summed on the up index of R. And then I have a negative term, omega CB
RAC summed on the lower index of R. This is the way a covariant derivative works, and omega is a connection. This is called the covariant exterior derivative of the curvature, and that's got to be zero. That's actually called the second beyond key identity, because the other one is simpler. Okay, the first Bianchi comes from the second equation. We have d squared omega a vanishing, and that's d of omega b wedge omega ac minus omega b wedge d of omega ac plus d of torsion. And now we substitute. This is omega, let's call it, oops, that's a B. So we need C omega BC plus TB wedge omega AB minus omega B wedge. All right, this one is going to be the d of omega AB is CB wedge omega AC plus RAB, and then plus d of dA. So we have d of dA, and then here we have a correction, so that's going to become a covariant exterior derivative. We're putting a connection on the free index here. Then we have a term omega B wedge RAB, and then the remaining terms omega C, omega BC, omega AB, minus omega B wedge omega CB wedge omega AC, some here, same sum. Those cancel. So what we get is, let me write it as the covariant exterior derivative of the torsion is equal to omega B wedge R AB. This is called the second Bianchi. This is the first Bianchi.
So where did that TB wedge omega AB go?
That's part of the T. That's a covariant derivative of T.
Okay.
Right.
Right.
And just take it as a definition. We can prove that it's a tensor because we know how connections transform, right? They have this inhomogeneous transformation law from the group. All right, so omega tilde is g omega g inverse minus dg g inverse. Right, we've seen that formula before. If you substitute that for all of the omegas up here, you'll find that R and T and these covariant derivatives are all tensors, but they come out to, you just get a gg inverse. As the transformation of those. So they're transforming linearly and homogeneously under the action of the whole Poincaré group. This whole structure still transforms under Poincaré transformation. Okay, now, these are actually things that we probably looked at last term. So I'll boldly say recall, although I'm sure you probably don't, but it's been a while. But if the torsion is zero, and we took the torsion to be zero, this one says that omega B wedge R AB is zero. But let's look at what that looks like. Omega B wedge R AB can be written, if I expand this as a horizontal form, that's omega B wedge R A B C D
omega C wedge omega D. So let me bring all these basis forms off to the same side, A, B, C, D. And we have omega B wedge omega C wedge omega D. That anti-symmetrizes B through D, and that says that the components of the Riemann curvature tensor, if you anti-symmetrize them on three indices, get zero. And you might remember that as one of the Bianchi identities from last term. So it's sitting inside of this. All that structure that we developed, we've just re-derived in, like, an hour. Okay, this one translates into R, A, B, C, D, covariant derivative E, anti-symmetrized on the last three indices, gives zero. Where that's a covariant derivative there. I don't remember if you did that one or not. I probably wrote it down.
We emphasized the check when we did the spherically symmetric.
Oh, okay. Good. All right, so let's question? How about question? I can almost hear it. Yeah?
Well, just on the horizontal coordinates. Curvature density. Do you just assign the differential forms to a particular how do you get to the last part?
How do I know which one to drop here?
Yeah.
All right. I'm taking the quotient of Poincaré by Lorentz.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The M's are generators of the Lorentz group.
Right. Okay.
And the P's are the translations. Okay. So when I take the quotient here, the horizontal forms are the ones dual to the generators that I'm not dividing by.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I get Lorentz group on the fibers, so the horizontal directions are the ones corresponding to the P's, the translation generators. The one forms dual to the P's are the single index omegas, these guys. Those are the horizontal one forms. They correspond to translations in the Poincaré group.
Oh, okay.
So if we've what we've left here are the translations when we take the quotient of Poincaré by Lorentz.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
Other questions? Good question.
When do we get the eigenintegration?
We need an action. That's the next step. Are you ready for threat in action? Threat in action? Let's threat in action. Okay, so we now have a geometric structure. You've got all this. I'll rewrite it here. And then, all right, this constructive geometry with local Lorentz invariants, all right, I can do a different Lorentz transformation at each point. That means I'm keeping my basis orthogonal, but I'm letting, but I can do any transformation at all differently at each point. So an orthogonal transformation or pseudo-orthogonal is a Lorentz transformation in space-time. So I can do any Lorentz transformation differently at each point. This is equivalent to being able to choose any coordinates at all, but I'm restricting to orthonormal frames. These basis forms are orthogonal in the sense that I can define an inner product, in fact, of these to be the Minkowski metric. Now, this is a definition beyond the structure I've built. Let's see. Should I rename these E's? Should I call them E's? I wonder if that would be daughter form. Let me change the notation. Let omega A be E A. you know, you should think of an orthonormal basis. It's called an orthonormal frame field. So a general form at any point can be expressed in terms of this orthonormal basis of one form. And so now I'm expressing the components of my one form in an orthonormal basis instead of a coordinate basis. A coordinate basis would be some dx's, and it would be the case that I could expand the orthonormal basis in terms of the coordinate basis with some coefficients. So, coordinate basis, orthonormal basis, and there are some matrix coefficients here. I'll distinguish these by using, I'll always use a Latin index for the orthonormal frame and a Greek index for the coordinate frame. Maybe I'll have you do some problems and explore that a little bit. But here are our equations. We know that we have curvature two forms given by C omega minus omega A, or omega C, B wedge omega A, C. We have torsion, and by construction, these things are tensors. Are there any other tensors? Okay. See, now let's see. This I'm going to write as D EA minus EB. It's just easier to have a different letter for these. You get too many omegas otherwise. So it's just a renaming. Let's see. There are names for these things. There are other names. An orthonormal frame field. It's also called the solder form. It's also called the Thierbein. Any of those names is equivalent. Either letter is fine. Omega AB is called the spin connection.
What does
bind
mean in German?
Leg.
Oh.
Four legs. Okay, so we have the Thierbein and the spin connection are the basic forms that we're dealing with. Notation, the formalism has been developed by a lot of different people in a lot of different contexts, so these things have acquired quite a few different names. It's called the spin connection because you need to work in an orthonormal frame to really define spinners in a curved space. Spinners are constructed from properties of the Lorentz group, and the Lorentz group acts on a flat space. So having an orthonormal frame allows you to define a connection that knows what to do with the spinner. And we can look at this before. Okay, are there other tensors? We can ask how these things transform, you know, any of the omega A's, either kind, is going to go to G omega G inverse minus DG G inverse. If we look at the solder form under such a gauge transformation, okay, what's going to happen is it's going to have a Lorentz transformation, and the G, let's see, how to say this, the DG for a translation, we no longer have translational symmetry. If you write this out in detail for the solder form and spin connection, and you say, okay, this is all fine, but now I'm not going to allow translations anymore because I've curved the manifold. Hey, Pam, how you doing?
Fine, how are you?
Good. Good to see you up here.
Welcome back.
Thank you. So I threw up the ball that I had in the song.
So what's the name? That's quite a name. What?
Azim. Yes.
Yeah.
From the Indian ball of fire. And that's what I have drawn. Ball of fire.
Oh, fire. Oh, this is going to be a hot one.
Yeah.
Oh, look out. Oh, great to see you back.
Yeah, same here.
You're feeling good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Good. 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 Translation, and you'll find that the flower form is now a tensor. You do not have the inhomogeneous part because you don't have any translation, local translations to take D out here.
Can you say that again, please?
We still allow ourselves to do local Lorentz transformations because when we added the horizontal curvatures, the fact that they're horizontal means we still can do Lorentz transformations. So when we do a Lorentz transformation, the corresponding gauge field transforms inhomogeneously. Right, so omega AB is going to do a local Lorentz transformation CD lambda inverse DB minus however the local Lorentz transformation is changing from point to point, AB, like that. But now, the power form, we used to have local translations too, with little one index lambdas that were translational symmetries, but because we've added curvatures and changed the connection, we no longer have, you know, it's a curved manifold, it doesn't have translational symmetry anymore. So the one index lambdas that were a gauge symmetry of these guys no longer exist. Those terms are gone, and we just have the linear homogeneous transformation under the Lorentz transformation. And there are one index things. They actually, if you work it out, you find that there's a just a simple Lorentz transformation of these things. They transform as a Lorentz four vector. So these are tensors. The E is a tensor. In addition, we have a metric. We allow ourselves the Lorentz metric in its inverse, and we allow ourselves the Levi-Civita tensor. Since the determinant of the Lorentz metric is 1, this is the same as the anti-symmetric symbol. Determinant of eta is 1, minus 1, but it's the absolute value. Yeah.
When we were doing special relativities last semester, we could only do global Lorentz transformations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's all the difference, right?
Okay.
The thing that allows us to do local Lorentz transformations is having introduced these non-tensors. We've introduced this connection that tells us how that Lorentz transformation changes from place to place and allows us to correct for the different Lorentz transformation at each point. It's exactly that inhomogeneous thing that makes it all work. And then from that inhomogeneous thing, we can construct now some tensors that characterize not just how you're changing gauge, but something new. A non-integrability of your ability to choose gauge. That's real curvature. That's a measurable thing. So we've seen this before. You have a gauge transformation, like a phase transformation, and you introduce a gauge vector to allow you to make local phase transformations. But now the curl of that becomes something physical. All right. Well, the curl of this omega is that curvature there. That's a curl right there. So that gets rid of this inhomogeneous part and gives us something that behaves tensorially, so it's giving us information that's independent of our choice of the Lorentz basis. It's giving us information that now describes the manifold. It's a field on the manifold, if you like. And it has the very same interpretation we gave it last semester when we talked about moving vectors around curves and finding that they're rotated when they come back. This RAB, right, it's a two-form. You integrate it over some two-dimensional region, and now integrate to the surface to the curve around bounding that region, and it gives the infinitesimal Lorentz transformation that you get by going around that little plaquette. So that's exactly what this curvature is doing. It's a two-form, that's a little elemental two-dimensional surface. You go around that plaquette, and this is how much infinitesimal Lorentz transformation you get in your basis vectors having done that. And that's a measure of curvature. So now, in response to Juan's question, we can use the available tensors, the metric, the Levi-Civita tensor, the solder form, and the curvatures, to write an action that now describes the physical theory. So,
real quick.
Yeah.
So that means that the fibers are the tensor spaces that are, the tangent spaces. Or tangent.
The fibers are,
The
fiber is, there's one point on the fiber for every possible orientation of an orthonormal basis.
All right, so I'm thinking
of one point. All right, so four of those, so there are six dimensions, six kinds of rotation you could do of a four-dimensional basis. Right, so it's a six-dimensional fiber here that tells you every possible orientation of that basis. So the point you pick on the fiber here, oh, it's this orientation. Next fiber over, oh, it's a slightly different orientation. You pick a cross-section of the bundle. That's one point on each of those fibers, and you've chosen a frame field
right.
On the whole space-time. Okay, what actions can we write? It ought to be an integral of the four form, right? A four-dimensional integral. And let's see. Well, there's one that's easy to write. We could write some constant times d wedge ed with the Levi-Civita tensor. There's a boring one. Just a volume, just a four-dimensional volume integral with some constant.
That's going to be our determinant root g, isn't it?
The determinant's one here. Minus one is the determinant of the metric because we're in an orthonormal frame. Right. So even though it's a curved space, we're choosing our vector basis, covector basis, so that the metric is still diagonal. You know. We want something with curvature in here. Let's stick in something. Let me raise an index here. I need to make. I want to write the simplest thing I can. I could wedge together two R's or an R dual like we did for Yang-Mills. That gets more complicated than necessary. You can write an R dual. Action, but you can also write, because you've got this solder form around, you can write something that's linear in the curvatures, like this. It turns out this is about the most general thing you can write without going quadratic in the curvatures. Right, you, for example, you can't have have anything with torsion at first order. If you have torsion, you need to make a four form. What do I do with the indices? All right, there's no rank three invariant tensor to contract off those indices. You know, we need a QACD, but there's no invariant tensor QACD with three indices on it. We have two indices or we have four indices, so we can make this, and this conveniently has two indices that fill it out. It's a two-form with two indices, but a two-form with one index, there's no way to make a linear action. We could have something like TA wedge TB and an A to AB. You know, we could have something like that. This is quadratic, and you know, space-time curvature is so small that we couldn't measure something quadratic anyway. But it turns out that the simplest thing worked. Okay, this is the most general linear action you can write. Anything else is going to be a total divergence, or you're going to have to make it quadratic in the curvature.
It's quadratic, but it'd be more accurate.
Well, it depends what the right theory of gravity is.
Okay.
The parameters of the linear curvature theory have been measured very carefully. That lambda, for example, is almost certainly not zero. It's called the cosmological constant. But a higher order, you know, unless it comes in as it could, you know, there'd be a constant, right? This has units of 1 over length squared, so you'd need a constant with units of something like 1 over length to the fourth. Well, you know, that length is probably something like a Planck length, and that constant is probably something really, really small. If that's the way it comes in, then your chance of measuring that anytime soon is nil. Entirely possible that there are higher order terms. In fact, from string theory, you get something that adds a constant squared, I think. It's the string slope parameter that goes like 1 over the Planck length squared. but you do get an RAB, which RCD, epsilon ABCD term. Except you get the corresponding thing in this is the total divergence. You vary that, you get a surface term, so it doesn't do anything. But in string theory, you're in 10 dimensions, so you just put a bunch more of these guys, epsilon A, B, C, D, E through F, up to 10 or 26 dimensions, wherever your string theory is. And now that gives you something. It's called an extended Gauss-Binet density. In four dimensions, that would be the Gauss-Binet invariant. It gives the Euler character of the manifold. Because it integrates to the surface, it characterizes the topology of the space. So it's called a character, a topological character. It's some invariant quantity that gives you something about the number of handles and boundaries of the manifold. But when you extend it like this in a higher dimension, it actually just becomes a nice thing to stick into your action. And it turns out string theory actually predicts something like that. So measuring the difference between string theory and this is general relativity with a cosmological constant. This term gives corrections on the order of the Planck squared. So very, very tiny correction. Certainly could be there. If you had to place bet, you'd say, yeah, let's bet with string theory. String theory looks good. Let's say there are those terms, too. But it's a bet, because there's not evidence. So let's take the simplest theory that involves any curvature at all and see what field equations we get. Then we can set about solving field equations and doing some gravity theory. So we vary the equation. And I always vary all of the connection one forms. Doing that is, in the context of general relativity, that's called a Palatini variation. In gauge theory, it's just the only sensible thing to do. You know, there's no reason you shouldn't vary everything in sight. So I'm going to vary the solid form, and I'm going to vary the spin connection.
Is that the whole action?
That's the whole action. Yeah, this is the one we're going to...
D4x?
Four ones. These are four forms, so there are four dx's sitting inside this already. Right, it's written. So four-dimensional integrals are integrals of four forms. So if I vary the Sauter form, del E of F, set that equal to zero. Let's see what happens. Well, varying each of these terms gives me the same thing. Do you believe that, or do you want to prove it for an exercise? Ah. Disbelief everywhere. Prove it for an exercise. Okay.
Well, it's pretty straightforward.
All right, you're going to get a del here, and one with a del there. You're going to get four terms, and each one of those will be varied. So you'll have a del E A with G... B, EC, EG plus EA wedge del EB wedge EC wedge EB, and two more terms. All right, interchange these two. Two one forms give a minus sign. Interchange the A and B here, you get another minus sign, rename your indices, and it looks just like the first one. So I claim we get four here, and it'll be... what position? Let's put it at the last position. EA wedge EB wedge EC wedge del of ED. That's on ABCD. And, I should have done the other one first, but never mind. I'm going to get two terms. R, notice, depends just on the spin connection. Right, when I vary R, I'm only varying the spin connection. So this variation with respect to E doesn't see it, so we just get EC wedge del ED upon ABCD. Close the bracket. And let's see, that gives me the field equation. So there are no derivatives of the variation of the Sauter form, so I can just write the field equation immediately. 4 lambda EA wedge EB wedge EC plus 2 R AB wedge EC all with an epsilon ABCD equals 0. That's my field equation. Now, when you have a three-form equation like this, the easiest thing to do is wedge with another wedge with one more form with E, let's say E, because I've got a D, and take the dual. Take the Hodge dual. So what happens is I get 4 lambda plus 2 times a half RAB. Let's see. What am I going to do with indices here? Better make it a... let's see. I need FG, I'm afraid. Now, let's... Let me rewrite this way. 4 lambda delta AE delta D, I'm going to wedge with EG, DF plus 2 times a half R-A-D-E-F. All time E-E wedge E-F wedge E-C, and then I'm putting in one more E-G. That's on A-B-C-D equals zero. Okay, does everybody see what I've done? I wanted to get something that looked like a volume form extracted. So the chronicers just turn the EF into an AB, so I get the ABC on the first term. The curvature takes the EF and just turns into the curvature 2 form with the 1/2. And then both terms already have the EC, and I've wedged in an extra EG because I want to now take the dual of that to get rid of the form. And the dual is going to turn these things into an epsilon EFCG. And it's going to give an overall factor that I'm just going to cancel anyway. So all I have to do is resolve what those two epsilons do. Well, what they do is they give me some anti-symmetrized Kronecker's. It's a product of 3 Kronecker deltas, anti-symmetrized. So delta EA, delta FB, delta GD, but I have to anti-symmetrize. And all of that equals zero. So let's press on and see what that says. I could have anti-symmetrized here, but this is good. So, same thing, just interchanging E and F. And this should be all permutations now. And there's a 1 over 3 factorial that just cancels, because it's all equal to 0. Everybody with me? See what I'm doing here? So now we just have to work out all these Kronecker deltas. So if I cancel the 3 factorial, what do we have? We have 4 times lambda times... right, the E and F are going to go to A and B. So I get N here and N here. You want to do it in N dimensions? General relativity in N dimensions or 4? Any preferences? We've been doing 4 all along, haven't we? Let's stick with 4. You want to just homework, do it in N.
Oh boy.
Okay, so yeah, it's all in accounting, you know, it's just okay, is Kronecker A equal to N or is it equal to 4? That's the only difference. So let's call it 4. Here we got another 4. So we get 16 delta GD. Second one, E, that gives an AD, which becomes an FD, which becomes a BD, which gives a delta GD. Period. Just one? Huh. Okay. Next term, EF go to AB. So we get AB, we get one more GD. Then here, EF, this becomes, that becomes A, that becomes B, so we're going to subtract 4 delta GD. Here, EA, that gives 4. BF, that gives 1. So minus 4 delta GD. And finally, AD, that's a GD. The FD gives 4, so minus 4 delta GD. So let's see. 18 minus 12 gives us about 6 of these things. So we end up with a 4 factorial. Okay. Let's look at the next term. Plus, EF goes to AB. That's easy. We just have AB, AB, delta GD. Plus, EF goes to DA. So we have RAB, DA, delta GB. Then RAB, EF goes to BD, delta GA, minus, RAB, EF goes to BA, delta GD, RAB, EF goes to AD, delta GB, and finally, RAB, EF goes to DB, and we have a delta GA. So, simplifying, what I say, this is 4, 5, 6, so that's 4 factorial lambda times Kronecker GB. Then this, I can absorb, that stays there, the GD does. There are a couple of those. What is this thing? Alright, you remember the Ricci tensor and Ricci scalar?
Oh, that's Ricci scalar.
So if I sum the first and third, that's the Ricci tensor, and I'm taking the trace of that. This is the Ricci scalar. So I just call that R. Here, notice the AB are interchanged. So I flip that, change it to a plus, I get a 2, and there's a delta GD. Right, these terms, there's one sum. These are going to be Ricci tensors. Remember, first and third is a plus Ricci. First, second and fourth would be a plus Ricci. But here, I want first and third, so I have to flip to get a minus sign. Here, I have to flip to get the B's lined up, or flip there to get the B's first and third. So I get minus 4 times Ricci AD. Times the Kronecker that changes the free upper index to a G. And now if I lower the indices and divide by 4, I have R, let's lower this, call it AB, lower this, I've divided by minus 4, so I get minus a half, I get the metric, A to AB times the Ricci scalar, and then here I've got some funny factor for no particular reason times the metric AB equals 0. That's the Einstein equation in vacuum with a cosmological constant. So we're back to general relativity. From the simplest action we can write in the gauge theory of the Planck rate.
Where did the first three factorial go? Where, how did you cancel that?
The three factorial?
Yeah, it's that,
It multiplies the whole thing. It multiplies everything, so I just cancel it.
Oh, right, zero.
Zero, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then
the 4 went to a three factorial because I divided by
right, 4.
I see. And notice the Einstein equation comes out with the orthonormal metric.
if I change to coordinates, which, you know, we could change this to a coordinate basis, my multiplying by that EUA, the coefficients of the transformation of space. And then, if, you know, that eta would become a G, and so on. You'd have mu's and mu's everywhere.